Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens, brought to you by TheAthletic.com. Usually it's my partner Marc-Antoine Gaudin saying those exact words at the beginning of every show, but he's not here to say them. He's off for a little bit, so I am riding solo, and as some of you may have seen, I asked you for some questions. We're going to run a bit of a mailbag episode today and asked you for some voicemails specifically, and you guys came through. There's a lot of voicemails to get to today. A lot of questions came in on Twitter. So we're going to address them, as many as we can, in the time we have together. It's now Monday evening. I'm talking to you live from Newark, New Jersey. Lovely Newark, New Jersey, where I arrived pretty much at the same time as the Canadians. Both our planes were sitting on the tarmac at Trudeau Airport because it was a ground halt at the airport in Newark. So I was one gate over from the Canadians' plane, and so I think both planes arrived. So don't worry, the Canadians should be there to face the Devils on Tuesday. But before we get to the questions, just kind of summarizing the day today, and you know, the Canadians again, so Sean Monahan was not on the ice for practice today, and Martin St-Louis on Saturday night, or Saturday day, I should say, after the morning skate in Toronto, you know, for one of the few times this season actually elaborated on a player's injury status. And he, you know, it's gotten to the point where the local reporters don't even ask Martin St-Louis about injuries, which I think was the purpose of him not being so forthcoming. With information, all the information on injuries comes from the communication staff. And his stock answer, whenever we ask him about an injury, is he says, I don't know. I don't know if that's plausible deniability, if he's just purposefully not getting the information. But in any case, he doesn't want to discuss it with us. So one of the local Toronto reporters actually asked him, oh, what's going on with Sean Monahan? How's his progress? And Martin St-Louis began with, I don't know. But then he said he's kind of plateaued. And so now we've gone from being plateaued, because he was on the ice in Toronto, didn't spend that much time on the ice, wasn't on for much longer than the team was. We've gone from plateaued to what clearly appears to be a setback, because he did not practice on Monday. So the trade deadline is upon us. It's here. Canadians have 5 games left before the trade deadline. Any hope of seeing him in New Jersey is now gone. Any hope of seeing him in Philly is likely gone on Friday. If he skates this week back home, because he didn't travel with the team, we'll see if he can get into the game on Saturday. And if not, then you're looking at the final game before the deadline, which would be against the second to last game is San Jose. And then the last game would be in Los Angeles on Thursday. So let's see what happens there. What might have been the most, I don't want to say humorous because it's not humorous, but this whole situation with the Canadians injuries has become somewhat humorous. So Chris Weidman took part in the Canadian skills competition on Sunday morning, which was, you know, I was talking to someone on the Canadians in Toronto, and I was like, how on earth did they schedule the skills competition at 10 a.m. the morning after a game in Toronto? he was like, I don't know, man. It's like, I don't know why this is happening. I have no idea. But basically, the team landed at around 1 a.m., which means most guys probably didn't get to bed until 2:30 a.m. They had to be at the Bell Center at 9 a.m. But the event, and I'll be frank, I missed it, but the event was kind of a nice break mentally, you know? And so I think it was a chance that, you know, the Canadians took the glass off the boards the way they did for the AHL All-Star Skills Competition in Laval. Which gave a chance for all the players to go sign autographs, take selfies, really have more of a connection with the fans. And it sounds like it was a great event, you know? And so that's good. You know, I mean, the timing of it was pretty wonky, but I'm glad people were able to have fun. Alex Belzil and Mike Matheson stayed on for like an hour signing autographs, taking photos. So good on them. But in that competition and during that day, Sunday, Chris Weidman took part and he won, the breakaway challenge. And then on Monday morning shows up and he's not on the ice at practice and he has an upper body injury. No timeline for his return, did not make the trip with the Canadians. So if Chris Weidman, I don't know this to be the case, but I would have to assume if he took part in the breakaway challenge that he was not injured when he did so. If the Canadians actually lost someone to injury in their skills competition, this team is officially hexed. Like, it's just officially gone so far off the rails in terms of injuries that it's really unprecedented. I was talking to Christian Dvorak this morning after practice because he is one of two guys on the team who are still in line to play every game this season. The other being Nick Suzuki, who hasn't missed a game since he began playing junior hockey. So, and he was like, you know, I've never seen anything like this for 1 year, let alone 2 years in a row. The Canadians missed somewhere around 600 man games to injury last year, and not counting Shea Weber. And this year they're in line to lead the league again. So honestly, there's some serious questions that need to be asked because it's 2 years in a row is a bit much. It's a bit crazy. And it's really gotten to the point where it can't just be bad luck. Now, the Chris Weidman thing, I got to admit, that sounds like bad luck. Whatever happened to him, whenever he got hurt, who knows? He might have gotten hurt when he got home. I don't know. But all I know is the last competitive endeavor he had was the skills competition. So if they lost a guy to injury during a skills competition, then this is officially taken on a proportions that I've never seen. I've never seen it. Christian Dvorak's never seen either. And it's funny, I kind of mentioned to him, because I don't know if anyone read our notebook this morning, you'd see that, you know, Christian Dvorak had a little bet with Cole Caulfield as to who would be the first guy to take a penalty that led to a power play for the other team, non-offsetting minor. So Dvorak actually took two offsetting minors. Cole Caulfield, who the bet was against, actually wound up taking the first non-offsetting minor when he got called for tripping on Josh Morrissey against the Winnipeg Jets. So he lost the bet. Turns out Cole Caulfield got him a belt. That was Christian Dvorak's prize for winning the bet, which was an indication, I think, that Cole Caulfield, it didn't really sit well with him that Christian Dvorak had taken two penalties before Caulfield took one and still won the bet. That's my interpretation of it. But anyhow, so I suggested to Chris Dvorak, I was like, oh, you should make a bet with Nick Suzuki. He's like, no, I'm not making a bet on that. That is not something I'm about to bet on, because that's just And then he revealed that actually this is something that Kirby Dach brought up, because he too had not missed a game to injury. And he brought it up that they were the three guys who hadn't missed a game either to injury or healthy scratch or what have you. And then Kirby Dach goes ahead and gets sick to the point that he's not even on this trip. Not now, not yet, at least. He was at the skills competition. He was at the game on Saturday. He was on the press box with Sean Monahan and Chris Weidman. So it's kind of similar to the Evgeny Dadonov situation where he was really sick, but he was just walking around with everyone in Minnesota back earlier in the season. That created like a bit of a scandal of sorts. I don't think this is scandalous yet, but it's strange and it's unfortunate because Kirby Dach was playing some good hockey. So all that to say, the good news on Monday is that Caden Gooley was at practice, non-contact sweater, but still practicing with the team. He is on the trip. He's going to continue practicing with the team. He will not play on the trip. Martin St. Louis was very clear on that. But that's a good sign, because him getting a chance to continue what he had started and frankly helping this team in the process, because, you know, there's no Joel Edmondson and there's no Arbor Jacki, and there's the list is long. And so that's a good sign. It's the first positive injury news the Canadians have had in some time. So good for him, and actually looking forward to seeing how quickly Caden Gooley can come back. So let's get to you guys. Let's get to your questions, because I don't want to ramble on and on forever. But we have a lot of them. So that's why I want to get to them, because I want to get to as many of the Twitter ones as I can. But I did say that I would prioritize the voicemails. So that's what I'm going to do. So we're going to start with DJ, who's got a question about free agents.
I'm calling to ask about the free agents that are probably not going to get traded this month or prior to the deadline. Wondering what you expect to happen to them. Do you think some of the lesser performers are going to come back on smaller contracts next year? Or are they all just going to walk it during free agency in the summer? Thanks for your time.
Okay, well, DJ, basically, you know, I mean, the only free agent that I think has a legitimate chance of coming back, the only unrestricted free agent, I should say, is Sean Monahan. I do think the Canadians have some, I shouldn't say the only one actually, because Corey Schuedemann is actually an unrestricted free agent. He might come back, but obviously he would be more of an option for Laval. But Sean Monahan is someone that I think the Canadians would consider bringing back. The way he played early in the season, the way this injury has lingered far too long, the way it's kind of ruined any chance they had of trading him at the deadline and getting even more for him. I mean, you know, don't forget, they already had a first round pick just for taking on his salary. They like what he does. They like, you know, they like his presence in the room. So I really don't see anyone else coming back. Honestly, Jonathan Drouin is basically guaranteed. I think someone else on Twitter had asked if there's any chance of Jonathan Drouin coming back. I really don't see it. Probably for the best for him. I mean, I'm sure he would be interested if the Canadians were interested. I don't think the Canadians are going to be interested. And if I'm Jonathan Drouin and I want to continue my NHL career, I would get as far away from Montreal as I possibly could. Listen, it's just been a series of red lights, bad luck, bad play, good play interrupted by bad luck, injuries. Just everything's just gone bad for him. The vibe for him in Montreal has gotten toxic. He's really entering kind of Scott Gomez territory, which is kind of appropriate because he hasn't scored a goal since January 1st of 2022, which is similar to the Scott Gomez drought, although far fewer games than Scott Gomez had. So I don't think any free agents are coming back. Okay, so that was pretty quick and dirty. I think we have Nate coming up now, who is also going to be a bit of a quick answer, but he's got a question on the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation.
I wanted to talk to you guys today about Pierre-Luc Dubois. He's made it known through his agent that he'd be open to coming to Montreal in the offseason. It's not often that we have a big name free agent, let alone a hometown boy wanting to come to Montreal. So how realistic do you think it is that we'll see Pierre-Luc Dubois in a Montreal Canadiens uniform next year? And what kind of ramifications will we see in the lineup?
Listen, I would say that if you have a player like this that wants to come to Montreal, whatever you have to do to make it work, you do. And, you know, there's a lot of noise here. But until Pierre-Luc Dubois becomes an unrestricted free agent, which is not until next year, he doesn't have full control over the situation. However, the Winnipeg Jets are going to have to strongly consider their options. You know, he's an RFA with arbitration rights this year. He's got a $6 million cap hit right now. He's going to get a raise from that. He's having a great season on a great team. But, you know, he's a year out from a UFA. And the Jets were in this situation with Jacob Trouba not that long ago, with a player who clearly expressed his desire to leave once he hits UFA. And this is when they traded him. They traded him a year out. So, you know, if the Canadiens want to get in on that, they can. If they're confident that all the chatter of him wanting to play in Montreal and that won't change until next year, if they're confident and waiting just to sign him as UFA, they could do that. But, you know, if you have Pierre-Luc Dubois, Nick Suzuki, and Kirby Dach as your top three centers, whatever order you want to put them in, I think you're looking pretty good. You know, you got a good foundation there. You got a good base of something to work with. And again, I can't stress this enough, but like the Canadians are not exactly a team that this happens to very often, where a player goes out and states pretty publicly and doesn't really make any effort to deny it that he would like to continue his career in Montreal. You usually get guys at the tail end of their, like David Savard was one of those guys. He wanted to come to Montreal, raise his kids in Quebec. David Savard is not Pierre-Luc Dubois. Pierre-Luc Dubois in the prime of his career. So it's you make whatever you have to do to make it work, you make it work. If you got to move someone to the wing, you move them to the wing. It's just, you know, so Pierre-Luc Dubois was drafted as a winger, just so you know. So that's, and really this is, what's funny about this is that Pierre-Luc Dubois is not Artemi Panarin, but Jeff Gorton, when he was in New York, had this happen twice that really turned the Rangers around. Had Artemi Panarin basically want to sign with the Rangers and no one else, although there were rumors about Florida in there. He wanted to go to New York. His wife wanted to go to New York. And Adam Fox, who got traded twice, orchestrated trades twice so that he could wind up with his boyhood team, the New York Rangers. And now he's, for my money, a top three defenseman in the NHL. So two extremely important pieces to the Rangers now being legitimate Stanley Cup contenders happened in very much the same way that this Pierre-Luc Dubois thing is shaking out. So Jeff Gorton's got a propensity for good bounces. And so let's see if this one actually works out. But as far as I'm concerned, whatever the Canadians have to do to make it happen. And honestly, when you think about the whole Josh Anderson situation, like I was talking to some scouts and some people about what a Josh Anderson trade would look like. And, you know, not everyone's unanimously in favor of this player. You know, I mean, some guys kind of see him as not having the best hands in tight and not having the best hockey sense. Other scouts quite justifiably see a huge power forward who can really skate, who takes the puck to the net, plays a power forward game, plays a playoff style game, and really can have a physical toll on opposing defensemen over a 7-game playoff series. They see that value. But one guy said something really interesting to me is that people will look at his contract. And to me, Josh Anderson's worth $5.5 million a year right now, the way he's playing even now. And his numbers are good and they justify that salary. Everyone looks at it as a big salary. I think that's fine. But the amount of years left on his contract is the problem for most teams. But for a team like Winnipeg, that's actually a benefit. I mean, look at all the guys that have orchestrated their way out of Winnipeg. Having a guy who's locked in at a pretty reasonable cap number, who provides sort of a playoff type element to your team, maybe that would be appealing to them. Maybe they could, if you build a trade around Josh Anderson plus this, maybe something for Dubois works out that way. But we'll have to see. We're not there yet. The Winnipeg Jets hope to go on a long run with Pierre-Luc Dubois and what is a wide open Western Conference this year. Let's see if that changes Dubois' mind. Maybe a competitive run in the playoffs convinces him that he wants to stay in Winnipeg, maybe on a 2 or 3 year deal or something like that. So there's a lot left to be seen on that. It's not going to happen right away, obviously. It's not happening at the trade deadline. More of an off-season thing. So we'll see what happens.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, now we're going to go to, we're actually going to listen to two voicemails back to back. One is from Patrick in Vermont, and the other is from Trevor in Calgary, asking very similar questions. So we're going to hear from them both.
Given the current young P Corps, what do you see the future of the P Corps looking like in 3 to 4 years? The Habs seem to have 4, 5, 6 good prospects, but nothing that screams Stanley Cup contender. Thank you.
Just a question about defense. We got a lot of great prospects coming up, but I see everyone always projecting, you know, whether it's Gouley or Barron or Harris, you know, as kind of good second-line pairing. Do you think we have a first-line pairing, a first-line defenseman in there? And if not, how do we go about either developing it or drafting for it or trading for it? Thanks, guys. Great work. Keep it up. Love it. Bye.
So, guys, you have, you know, you're on the same wavelength here. And I would argue that, I mean, I think, okay, first of all, you're right. There is no top-end, surefire, top-pairing defense prospect in the Canadian system. Right now, this is something they're going to have to draft. I personally think Caden Gouley has shown signs of being, again, I mentioned Trouba and the Dubois part, a Jacob Trouba type. You know, not quite as viciously mean, but still has like a very good mean streak. And as he grows more confident, like, I don't know how many of you watched Caden Gouley play in the WHL. I did. And he can be nasty. Like, he has that edge to him. I think in the NHL, he was still just trying to get his bearings. He's a rookie after all. So once that happens, I think Trouba is actually a pretty good comp for the type of player Caden Gouley can be. I think he has more offense in his game than a lot of people, myself included, thought at the junior level. But as far as that mean streak goes, I mean, I remember I watched him play a game in Red Deer, and Red Deer weren't stomping on Prince Albert, but they were having their physical way with them. And so coming out for the third period, I think they were down 4-1 or something. And like the first shift of the third period, this poor Red Deer forward crossed the Prince Albert blue line, and Caden Gouley like nearly tore his head off. Like, honestly, like, it was charging, but man, like, it was charging with a purpose. It was charging like to tell his teammates, stop taking this crap from these guys. Let's take the fight to them. And that third period, Prince Albert's compete level went up, and they weren't getting pushed around as much. And I was actually watching that game with Caden Gouley's dad, and I was just blown away. I was like, oh my God, he nearly killed that poor kid. I was like, God, what happened? And his dad was just kind of like, yeah, he does that sometimes. You know, it's just like a total, yeah, it's not a big deal. That happens from time to time. So I think that element of Caden Gouley's game, we're going to see more and more as we go along here. The offense, as I mentioned, I think is there. I don't think it'll be like, he's never going to be a prolific offensive defenseman. Like, he's going to need a puck mover next to him if he's playing on a top pair, but he's like borderline top pair. So maybe 3 years from now, who knows what's going to come of Wayne Hudson, but he's the one guy in the system who has a ceiling that's that high. It's just that his floor is so low. Like, there's no prospect with a bigger disparity between the floor and the ceiling than Lane Hudson. The ceiling's sky high, super intriguing. And if he makes it, he'll be great. Like, that's kind of the thing with him. Like, if he makes the NHL, I'm pretty confident saying he will be a highly unique and a super effective NHL player. But the chances of him not making the NHL are quite strong. So you don't really want to bank on that. And so, yes, I agree that I think the system will require some reinforcements in terms of a top end, very high end defense prospect. And I mean, this year when you look at the group of forwards that are available, it's a very forward-heavy draft. The Canadiens probably would, if they pick anywhere from 6th to 8th or even 9th maybe, they would probably get first pick of the top defenseman, whoever they determine that to be, in that range. They could probably get the best defenseman in this draft this year if they chose. I'm not sure which way they're going to go regarding that, but they are in position to maybe do that. It could be argued that none of the defensemen available this year belong in that range, 6 to 8. But, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone expected Shimon Nemitz to go second in the last draft. So it's, you know, sometimes defensemen really kind of have their own gate, like Moritz Seider going to Detroit that year really kind of threw that draft off a little bit. So I think the Canadiens could be in a position to get a really, really good defenseman in this draft. But if not, the year after, I mean, they're going to have to prioritize it at some point for sure, because yes, there's a lot of depth defense-wise, but that top end, and really, frankly, even at forward, I mean, other than the guys who are on the team, you know, there's no real pop star power. You know, there's no A-plus prospect at forward, goalie, or defense in the Canadian system. There's just a lot of A minus, B plus, B, just tons of depth. And so not a bad thing, because the more of those guys you have, the more chance you have of one of them becoming an A or an A plus guy. But you know, as it stands right now, they're going to need some help at that position. No doubt about it in my mind, but the depth is encouraging. You know, I think Arber Jacka is going to be a defense, like a really solid NHL defenseman for a long time. Yeah, Jordan Harris, I'm still not sure on where he actually fits on like a really competitive team, but promising guy. So, you know, Justin Barron, I think his game's starting to pop, and you're starting to really see him play with a confidence that allows him to put his best foot forward. And that's encouraging and intriguing for the Canadiens. But I, you know, I do believe that they will need to not only place priority on drafting defensemen, like in terms of volume, but drafting a defenseman high in the draft, try and get a really high end guy, would probably be the way to go. Okay. Now we have a Tyler. Tyler has a question, on free agency and what Kent Hughes might do this summer. Let's listen to Tyler.
My question is regarding free agency, and if you have a sense of what Hughes will do with the upcoming cap space this summer. My thoughts are, with Drouin, Dadonov, Byron, and Monahan's current contracts disappearing, it will allow for Caulfield's upcoming contract, as well as money for Harvey Pinard and potentially Ylinen. Do you think the Canadiens will use the rest of their space to go after potential big fish free agents like Bertuzzi, who could be a fill a big hole on the left wing there, maybe like a right shot D, someone like Dumba? Or do you think they'd be more inclined to keep their cap space as a weapon for next year's trade deadline, maybe let this team get healthy and compete as is for the most part next year, and give our guys like Gouley, Slepkovsky, and the others another year to develop before they get active or aggressive trying to sign top free agents? And then there's always the third option, acquiring contracts via trade for someone like Pierre-Luc Dubois, which personally I feel is the least likely scenario, but please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'd love to have PLD on the team, especially if we could keep Doc along with Nick and have those three up the middle, or even if you had to put one in the wing, it'd be great. Either way, just looking for your thoughts on the matter there. Thanks for taking my call, and keep up the great work.
Okay, Tyler, well, it was a bit of a long question, but I thank you for asking it. I'm going to give a bit of a short answer. I really don't think the Canadiens are going to be all that active in free agency, honestly. I understand all that money's coming off the books, but it's just like, you know, You don't want to be a team like, oh, I got money, let's spend it as fast as humanly possible. No, I think this group welcomes that money coming off the books, and they're going to be very judicious with how they spend it. Obviously, Cole Caulfield's going to get his contract at some point in the next few months. But otherwise, I would be stunned, really stunned, if the Canadiens did anything in free agency this summer, anything of real significance. I think they could be active in the trade market. I think looking at trades, I think they would be very interested in trying to get a young goaltender. So if they can turn one of their roster players or even some of their picks in the draft into a young goaltender who's kind of on the verge of the NHL, someone like a Dustin Wolf in Calgary, but not necessarily him, but someone like him, I think would interest them. But yeah, I have trouble seeing, I don't think they're going to sign a free agent goalie because really they do have two goalies already. I could see them being active in trades this summer, just more so hockey trades than anything else, but it's not, I don't think the time is right for them to jump into free agency. They're not even close to being a competitive team, and that's really something that you want to do when you start seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and the tunnel's pretty dark as far as the Canadians are concerned right now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, the last of the voicemails, and then we'll move on to some of the other questions that you guys sent me on Twitter. Let's go to this last one, and it's actually a very interesting question. Let's listen to it.
Hello, Harpon. So this is Loïc Ledon. I was wondering something that could be interesting for the Canadians, and I was hoping for your thoughts about it. I just read an article saying that Doug Armstrong from the Blues is thinking to maybe use his draft pick for a quick reconstruction. So what do you think about Josh Anderson going for the Blues against the first pick 2023 of the Blues? Would that be interesting, too expensive? So what do you think about it? So thanks again. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, thank you for the question. Yeah, it's an interesting hypothesis. It's kind of like what I was talking about with the whole Dubois situation, is that I don't think St. Louis is going to trade their own first round pick. First of all, you might be able to get in the market for New York's first round pick or Toronto's first round pick. I don't think the Blues are trading their pick. That would be a real stunner to me. You know, they kind of recognize, listen, they, along with everyone in the sport, recognize the type of talent that you can get where they're sitting. They're actually one spot ahead of the Canadians in the standings, so one spot behind the Canadians in the lottery standings, which puts them in line to draft eighth, assuming they don't start winning games all of a sudden, because they could actually move up pretty far. So I don't think you're getting that pick. But, you know, the Rangers are the Leafs pick, which is going to be late in the first round, and at which point the draft is no better than most other drafts are. Maybe you can get into that kind of a conversation. Because Doug Armstrong did legitimately say that he does not plan on going on a super long rebuild here. So it's but I think the important thing to realize with Josh Anderson is that he becomes a lot easier to digest, not this offseason, but next offseason when the cap goes up. Assuming it does, assuming this whole Bally Sports thing does not throw NHL revenues for a complete and utter loop. But, you know, it's looking like this year it's going to be $1 million. It's going to go up by $1 million. And then the year after, it's going to be tied to revenue again. And that's when it could go up $4, $5, maybe even $6 million. So at that point, Josh Anderson becomes a lot more palatable to a lot more teams. And so that's when his value gets really much higher. And so I think, you know, the risk the Canadians would have waiting that long is, does Josh Anderson maintain his level of play for that long? I think he could. I don't think he's going to become slow suddenly. Frankly, the way things are going in Montreal, the big risk is that he gets like an awful injury, knock on wood for his sake, because I never hope anyone gets injured. But God, if I'm Josh Anderson, I'm looking around, I'm like, I'm going to get it at some point, you know? So that's the risk. But you know, sense I get, I would kind of move him while the demand is high, because listen, he's been a productive player this year. He does play a playoff style. If you trade him to a contender, you know, a Carolina, which stylistically I think he would really fit well with, I know they're in on, you know, Timo Meier and a whole bunch of other, but, you know, if they were able to provide a package that would make Ken Hughes think about it, that would be a really, really good fit stylistically. You know, Jersey obviously is a smaller team up front. They could use some heft. But, you know, to get back to your question, more of a, you know, kind of a hockey trade or getting the pick from St. Louis. I don't think you're getting St. Louis's pick. And frankly, I think the Canadiens would probably want St. Louis's pick. So that might not be a good fit. Okay. So we're going to get to a few of your Twitter questions, not too many, but we'll try and get a few of the ones that I found interesting. Let's see. This one was actually interesting. This was sent by someone named Nathalie Ricard. And she asked, why don't players on LTIR have to work for the team in one way or another? Shea could have helped with mentoring young defensemen last year. Same with Carey this year, who could mentor Monty and or Caden Primeau and Laval. Or they could do PR for the team or for the foundation. It's a good question. I think it's a matter of not forcing them to do it. I mean, Shea Weber had actually started scouting for the team. He was doing some pro scouting for the Canadians while he was on LTIR. So that was something that he did, something that he wanted to do. I've heard he's actually been on the ice in Henderson for the Vegas Golden Knights and is working with some of their young players. So you need, you know, you don't want to force a player to do anything. If Carey's case, you know, I'm not sure what he wants to do. I could see, you know, him saying at his last big press conference that, you know, he has not closed the door on winning the Stanley Cup, but knows that it probably won't happen as a player, suggests that he wants to stay in hockey. So I think this year was a lot for Carey Price to deal with. Listen, he went over, you know, he was just kind of still grappling with his new reality, his new sober reality after last year, with the reality that his career is in all likelihood over. It's a very difficult thing for him to digest. If I were the Canadians, I would want to have a serious conversation with him. I think his wife Angela posted on Instagram recently that they plan on moving the family back out west for next season, which was kind of another sign of the obvious that he's not going to play anymore. But you know, one thing that I think the Canadians should do, and I think every organization should do, is really beef up their goaltending departments. They should have goaltending departments like the Florida Panthers do, like a couple of other clubs do. And he would be great to have in something like that, you know, to head something like that, like their department of goaltending, and not only evaluation, but development, everything that has to do with goaltending. There's a lot more intelligence that could be used in that department. Because, you know, I've talked to a couple of scouts and I'm just like, don't you find it crazy that there's not more goalie scouts? That you guys aren't scouring the earth for goalies the way you are for every other position? And he kind of agreed with me. So yeah, it's kind of weird. So, but, you know, to get back to your question, Nathalie, I don't think you should force it on players. Yes, they're getting paid but they're getting paid as players. If they can't play because they're injured, because they got injured playing, they've kind of fulfilled their obligation to the team. So, I mean, I think if they want to do it, great, but you don't want to start forcing players to do things they don't want to do, because that gets around. Players start talking, and if they sign a long-term deal with that team and they wind up on LTR and their career winds up being over, they're going to be like, oh, they're going to force me to do something I don't want to do. So then they might just not sign that contract. So something to keep in mind, you know, the world of unintended consequences. Another one I got here from someone named Louis-François. Is there a risk that St. Louis loses his dressing room by the end of the season? Against Toronto, we saw discouragement from the players that did not seem like the tireless Habs we have seen in recent months. That's a good question, but I don't think it's a matter of St. Louis losing his dressing room. I don't think it's anything that Martin St. Louis will have done. What I think is gonna get difficult is just this injury situation is heavy. Like it's, you know, you look at the game against Toronto and you look at the game against Carolina. Each of those games, the Canadiens had no business being in either of those games, but they played with both those teams for a good long while before it just all crumbled, which is kind of the result of non-NHL players having that fact catch up to them. You know, in order to compete with NHL teams, you need NHL caliber players. And the Canes are missing a lot of NHL caliber players. It's a long list. And that, to the actual NHL guys on the team, can be discouraging. So, you know, these guys have a desire to compete. I'm sure it doesn't bother management to see them in games only to get blown out in the end. Kind of the best of both worlds there. Have a competitive 40 minutes and then let the better team win. Kind of helps the whole draft lottery situation. But yeah, I don't think it's because, if anything, Martin St. Louis is keeping this room together. Like, the level of belief that the players have in this coach is just through the roof. Like, it's really nothing that I've really experienced as a journalist. You know, like, think of all the, I mean, Guy Carboneau maybe came close, but even then, I don't think he had the same kind of juice as Martin St. Louis has in this room. But he was probably the guy who came close to him, or Bob Gainey. And so it's, but you know, I mean, I didn't cover Mario Tremblay, but you start from there and you go up the line. I mean, listen, there were some good coaches, definitely good coaches here. You know, Alain Vigneault, even, you know, you might laugh, but Michel Therrien, who had a long career coaching, Claude Julien, obviously. I've never seen a coach have this kind of buy-in as Martin St. Louis has with these guys. Let's see, I'm going to get to another one. Yes, this is the big one. Okay, so listen, I addressed the signing Monahan thing. There were a couple of questions on that. This one comes from Angelo Ferreira. Is that possible? Sorry, but I kind of cut and pasted a bunch of these. At HabCC22. Will there be major changes to the Canadiens medical and training staff this offseason, given the many misdiagnoses and rehabilitation of players in the past few seasons, i.e. Price, Weber, Byron, Edmondson, Monahan? Very worried for Caulfield, Slefkovsky, et al. This is the big question, and I really do get the sense that there's something the Canadiens are going to look at this offseason. As I started the show with, it's hard to know whether to blame this on the medical staff, on the training staff, but I, you know, the Canadiens wanted to be a cutting edge team. And honestly, I recommend Eric Engels wrote a really good piece that ran today on Sportsnet about Jeff Gordon's desire to modernize the Canadiens and the steps they've taken to doing that. But this is one area where they maybe have not gone through that process yet. And maybe there are things they can do to improve, you know, and without putting all the blame on the current staff, just having more innovative ways to prevent injuries might be something that they should be looking at, you know, because this is back-to-back years a constant steady stream of an unprecedented amount of players going into the infirmary and staying there much longer than they were supposed to. And, you know, listen, Brendan Gallagher, I think they said he would be out 6 weeks. Minimum of 6 weeks was the diagnosis. And that was given... Let me just find it here. That was given on January 6th. Or no, sorry. That was, 2 weeks, and then it turned into 6 weeks. Anyhow, 6 weeks, January 11th. Okay? So let's say that doesn't go retroactive to when he was actually hurt. Let's say it goes 6 weeks from January 11th. Well, we're coming up on that now. And I'm gonna tell you that I would be shocked if Brendan Gallagher comes back within that six-week time frame. It would shock me. I don't think he's going to be back in time. He's still not close to skating. I saw him with a boot on just not that long ago. So this just keeps happening. Like, it's the Sean Monahan and Joel Edmondson thing is just ridiculous. I mean, January 26th, Joel Edmondson has an injury to his lower body. The expected duration is unknown. January 27th. Joel Edmondson's upper body injury status has been updated. The expected duration is day to day. We are February 20th. He has still not played since then. Something's got to change, and you can't modernize the whole organization and not modernize the one area that actually keeps the players that you're finding with all these analytics and all this scouting and everything that you're investing in all goes to naught if you can't keep the players on the ice. So it's something that definitely needs to change. Listen, thank you everyone for all your questions. I know I didn't get to all of them. I'm really sorry, but I tried to get to as many as I could. But listen, I got a week, you know, on the road coming up. Big test against New Jersey on Tuesday. And then the Canadiens are in Philadelphia for 3 days, face the Flyers on Friday, back against the Senators on Saturday. We will see. We will see what this week brings in terms of injured players, particularly Sean Monahan, because on Saturday, Martin St-Louis, when he said he's kind of plateaued, we'll see what next week brings. Well, the first day of next week was Sean Monahan not practicing. So trade deadline's coming up. I'm going to try and gather as much information as I can this week. I'll be back on Friday, still without Marc-Antoine, but I'll be back with Le Sport Athletique on Friday in French for our French listeners or for our listeners who listen to both. I will speak to you then. And just a reminder that if you have not subscribed to The Athletic, want to read the stuff I'll be writing all week, you can go to theathletic.com/athletic support. You always get a discount on your first 3 years subscription with that link. So theathletic.com/athletic support. And if you haven't yet, please go to whatever podcast platform you are listening to us on and leave a rating and a comment. It helps other people find the podcast. I will speak to you all Friday. Thanks.